So a few months back, I took a sip of a really, really good espresso. It was very rich, creamy. There was a layer of crema, like that golden foam floating on top. It sparkled with a bit of acidity and chocolate notes, just sumptuous. And I began to wonder, who woke up one day and thought, you know what we should do? Let's make a really short, intense coffee by grinding the coffee super fine and pushing the water through with a lot of pressure. That is how you make a good espresso. But who came up with that idea? And here's the thing. We do know some of the origins of espresso. We know who and why and how. But what we don't have is the color, you know, the good story. So let me give you a blend of what I imagine might be the origin story of espresso. So one fine summer day back in the 1880s, a man with a wonderfully coiffed white mustache and beard,
called Moriondo,
strides into a hotel cafe, the Gran Café Ligure. Now let me be clear, he's not here to enjoy a coffee. He owns the place.
Moriondo is the owner of various hotels and establishments in Turin.
This is Professor Jonathan Morris, a coffee historian and the co-host of our series, A History of Coffee, link in the show notes. Now, I would imagine that Moriondo is very proud of his grand hotel cafe. Possibly in the corner is a phonograph playing a Verdi opera. It's like a really early version of an LP player. This is cutting-edge technology. And he also feels very proud because his cafe is in the same city where the King of Italy is from. The grand northern city of Turin, sandwiched between the Alps and the Mediterranean. Moriondo walks into the middle of the tables, stops and looks around, and he spots a problem. One of his guests is complaining to the manager. "Look, I have a busy day and I wanted a quick coffee, you know, to get me going. It's been 10 minutes and nothing's arrived. I'm going to be late for my first appointment now." The manager is very apologetic. He then strides into the kitchen and shouts at one of his staff, "Where's the coffee the gentleman ordered?" And his staff reply meekly, "Sorry, sir, I just need a couple more minutes because I'm just halfway through pouring the water." Now, back in the 1880s, espresso machines hadn't been invented yet. So when one of Moriondo's patrons orders a coffee,
they would have been probably given a filter over a cup.
And as you know, making a filter coffee can take time. And Moriondo, he thinks to himself,
"I don't want to wait 4 minutes to make a coffee for my clients. I want to be able to serve them quicker."
And what he does next leads a number of espresso machine engineers to name him
the father of espresso.
The father of espresso. It's a grand title.
Uh-huh. Okay, so here we have Angelo Moriondo.
But how good was this machine, really?
And he's created this contraption.
And a few months back, I visited the Museo delle Macchine per Caffè, MUMAC, part of the Cimbali Group, to look at a replica of Moriondo's machine. There's a link to this machine and all the machines we're going to talk about in the show notes.
It looks like a boiler with bits on the side.
It looks like a hot water boiler. You might find it at a wedding. But it's got all these gnarly metal bits and pieces hanging off from the side. And let me be frank. As an espresso machine, this thing is terrible. And I'll explain in a second why it's a terrible espresso machine. But as far as our white mustachioed Moriondo is concerned, it fixed his speed problem. Anna Cento, the curator at the MUMAC Museum, explained to me how this machine made coffee faster.
So the boiler makes the steam. The steam go to the water and the water go to the coffee.
Moriondo invented what is basically a hot water boiler. But the steam it creates would push hot water through half a kilo of ground coffee, and then it would just sit in an urn hanging off this machine. And when someone orders a coffee, you just decant it into a cup. So that's the plus side. Get an order for a coffee. Turn the lever, outpour some of that pre-made coffee, put the cup in front of the customer. But in almost every other way, this was a terrible espresso machine. You know, no shade to Moriondo. What he created with the technology at the time, it's ingenious. But I would not use this machine to make espresso. Not in a million years.
So it was like, actually, not yet an espresso coffee machine, but
for one,
fusion coffee
the coffee it made, it wasn't even espresso. It made something that might have tasted closer to a filter coffee. No crema, no luscious mouthfeel. And that actually might be the reason Moriondo referred to the coffee his machines made as café instantáneo, instantly made coffee, rather than so espresso like coffee.
20, 30 coffee already made inside this.
Oh, and it might also have tasted pretty stale, because up to 50 coffees could be made at once, and then they just sit around in an urn, waiting to be decanted. The coffees might have tasted oxidized, thin,
I guess
papery.
We can't see where we can actually put the coffee into the system.
So this machine made a very disappointing quote-unquote espresso, but it also was pretty poor on usability.
The coffee was inside there.
It's quite hard to get out. You have to undo the screws, open a lever, and then take the whole thing off.
To make a new batch of coffee, you had to open levers, undo screws, touch hot metal components. Just a nightmare. And when I saw Moriondo's machine, I, for the first time, realized, oh my goodness, we have come a long, long way when it comes to making that delicious, creamy, mouth-watering espresso. And that is the journey I want to take you on today. It is the story of how espresso machine technology developed these last 150 years. Things are gonna get a bit bloody.
My hands looked like I was out of a serial killer horror movie.
And there are moments in this story where I'm just flabbergasted at the ingenuity of engineers, especially when I visit the manufacturers of a fully automatic espresso machine, Eversys, the sponsor of this episode, that at the push of a button, make an espresso as tasty as a good barista. And it's a story of how a technological solution creates its own problems that require their own solutions. And the cycle keeps continuing, and they develop in ways that Moriondo himself could not possibly have imagined. And it really gets you wondering, what is the perfect espresso machine? How much further can we go? I'm James Hopper, and this is The Science of Coffee, a spin-off series from my documentary podcast, Filter Stories, and a journey into coffee's hidden microscopic secrets. So, it's the early 20th century, 1905. The Wright brothers invented an airplane that took off and landed. Electricity is now surging its way into cities. And the streets are full of horses.
And this, James, my friend, is the first commercial espresso machine.
The Mumak Espresso Museum, Jonathan and I stand in front of the first commercial espresso machine. What Moriondo made was never made commercially. But these sorts of espresso machines, made back in the early 20th century, made their way into hotels and bars across Italy. And to my mind, they look like fire hydrants.
But this is Pavoni, the Pavoni Ideali, but really this is...
These fire hydrant-looking espresso machines, they are gorgeous. Shiny, ornate embellishments like leaves and ribbons. And on top of many of these machines stood a proud metal eagle, wings outstretched. But let's cut to the chase. How good are they as espresso machines?
So what was wrong with Moriondo's machine that this thing fixed?
So one of the big problems with Moriondo's machine was the fact that the coffee probably tasted quite stale. These machines fixed that.
Well, have a look at it. This thing's got portafilters on it. Mm-hmm. That's the huge jump.
But this machine had a portafilter. And you know what a portafilter is. It's the handle that holds the ground coffee that you slot into an espresso machine. And now, coffees could be made fresh to order.
Café.
When you get an order for coffee, you put coffee powder into the portafilter, lock it into the grouped, the machine, and out comes freshly brewed coffee that you immediately serve to the customer. But as quote-unquote espresso machines, how good are they, really? And as far as I'm concerned, they are not good at all. And the first very serious problem is that these machines could be extremely dangerous.
Espresso, per favore.
Let me give you a day in the life of the person making the coffee. Not just any day in the life. Perhaps the worst day in their life. Imagine a very chaotic day. One of your customers at the bar is complaining about the public transportation, and 5 minutes ago the owner was having a go at you because your tie wasn't straight. Oh, and then a delivery person walks through the door and they need a signature. And just as you're about to put your pen to paper...
Of a coffee machine.
Oh wow, this is amazing.
Italian old magazine, and this was a real news that happened in this period. And in fact,
Anacento shows me an image from a 1940s Italian newspaper at the Momac Espresso Museum.
This is extraordinary. So this image, I mean, you have a bar and all the patrons around it, you know, wearing, you know, suits and ties, and then this espresso machine, which is basically like a fire hydrant, it rips from the middle. And you have steam and pressure and shrapnel flying in all directions. You have people covering their eyes. You have people falling over, you know. And the barista, the poor barista, gets it right in the neck. He is like, because behind him are all the glass bottles, which are also exploding. And it also says in this article, the barista was pretty badly hurt.
And the bottles and the glass go into him, yeah. And they're all over the place.
Wow.
Yeah.
I was curious. What was inside these espresso machines that could explode?
Can we open the lid?
And I got my answer a few days later when I was at another espresso machine museum, the Arancilio Officina 1926, a museum run by Arancilio, the espresso machine manufacturers.
What year did this machine come out?
1927.
Wowza.
And they had their own Arancilio version of this fire hydrant looking machine.
Aprire la coperto, è possibile?
Ah, questo?
And I asked Giorgio Arancilio, the former president of the company, whether I could take a look inside to see for myself what was exploding.
No,
we try gently lifting the lid, but it doesn't budge.
You are such a destructive person. You're not normally allowed to do this.
This is very special.
Jonathan Morris was not amused.
We are.
But it works. It works.
Giorgio Arancilio gets a paper knife, gently undoes the screws in the side.
Here we go. Oh my God. Up.
And lifts off the lid.
Wow.
There is a kind of circuit that hits the
Okay.
Motor.
So, explain to me what the hell is going on.
It's different. Just a little bit difficult to understand.
This is Let me show you how this machine works by pretending we are a droplet of Milan tap water. And why? You could almost kill a barista.
Okay, so the water comes in from the side, from the bottom, right? It goes up into...
So, you're pushed from the mains, the water pipes, through an inlet tube and start swirling around in a brass cylinder in the middle of this espresso machine.
Actually, a kettle. This is like a kettle, right?
Yes,
mini kettle.
It's like a mini kettle. With the aim to show...
So, you're a droplet of water, you're swirling around in this brass container. However, there's a heating element that's giving you energy. And you're moving around faster and faster, and then eventually you break free from all your neighboring water molecules and turn into a gas. And as you're flying around in the air, you keep smashing into and bouncing off the metal container. You hitting the side of this metal container, that is what we measure as pressure. And the pressure builds and builds.
Right. How much pressure is in the chamber?
Approximately 1.5 bar.
Okay. So you boil.
And as you probably know, one bar of pressure is what we experience when we're at sea level. So this boiler has 50% more pressure than what we feel, you know, going about our day. But the reason these machines are so explosive is because you, as the barista, have to keep an eye on the pressure in the boiler. Now, you release some of the pressure every time you make a coffee, because by turning a valve, the steam condenses into water and is pushed through the bed of coffee to make your espresso. But if you don't make coffees for a long time, the pressure just builds and builds and builds. And if you don't want this whole thing exploding on you, you have to release a valve occasionally on the side of the machine. And that's why the barista actually wasn't called a barista.
That was not even called barista, it was called machinist.
A machinist.
Yeah, because it was with the same idea, it was
could drive a train or could handle an espresso machine.
It was a technician, not a barista.
And this, by the way, is Silvia Bartoloni, guest relations manager at the third espresso machine museum I visited, L'Accademia del Caffè Espresso, half an hour outside of Florence, run by La Marzocco. So these early boilers were dangerous. And that's not the only reason. These are frankly terrible espresso machines. Because purely from the point of view of the espresso...
Well, quite a lot of people weren't happy with the quality of coffee by the 30s that was being produced by machines. So Ely also...
These were bad espressos. And that's because these espressos were brewed using super hot steam.
So this is not water, this is steam.
Exactly.
When you make coffee with super hot water, and steam is by definition above the boiling point of water, the water is extracting a lot from the coffee. And if you go back to episode 2 of this series on coffee extraction, you know that a highly extracted coffee can be very strong, very bitter. The other thing is that the espresso doesn't resemble what an espresso looks like today at all.
Is it like more similar to the mocha?
So Giorgio Arancilio says it tastes more like, you know, the Italian stovetop coffee that Italians make in their kitchens. It's nowhere near as deep and luscious as an espresso, and there's no crema.
The German war is at an end. Today is victory in Europe's day.
So, fast forwarding a couple of decades. We're now in the late 40s, rolling into the 50s. The Second World War has come and gone. The iconic Italian scooters, the Vespa, are hitting the streets. American rock and roll is sweeping across Europe.
Vespa, lo scooter più venduto nel mondo.
James. So, listen, we've walked into the next room.
And espresso machines take a giant step forward.
Totally revolutionary comes out and you're standing next to it. And that is the Gaggia Originale, the Gaggia Classico.
Now, finally, we're getting somewhere with these espresso machines. For the first time, we have a machine that makes what I today would consider an espresso. Rich and creamy, sumptuous. And, most importantly,
for the first time we have crema on the coffee.
This machine produced that dark, velvety foam that floats on top of an espresso. Crema.
So when this started, they actually called it crema caffè, cream coffee, to distinguish it from what was being made before as espresso. So there's this whole new naming of the drink.
What had changed to now create crema was that the coffee was now being brewed in a completely different way. Let me show you how. So, at the Mumak Espresso Museum, they had one of these vintage espresso machines produced by Gaggia that now made crema. And it doesn't look a million miles away from a modern espresso machine, except for two key differences. Its styling and the rods sticking out on top of it.
Looks a bit like a
so wind. Regarding its styling, Anacento, Jonathan and I actually had a debate as to whether it was more cinema curtain.
If you remember those old cinemas where you used to have curtains in front and a ruched curtain, so it looks like...
Or American jukebox.
Because the American dream is very common in this period, so also...
I've put a link in the show notes so you can decide for yourself. But the most important difference is what is protruding out the top of these machines.
Yes, what's the it? First coffee machine with the system of the lever.
Half meter long handles are sticking out the top. So, let me explain how these levers produced a delicious coffee with crema. You're a barista. Get an order for a coffee. Get the porter filter. Fill it with ground coffee. Lock it in the group head. And then you pull down the lever. By pulling this lever down, you compress the spring that's sitting above the coffee. Water rushes in. Then you let go of the lever and the spring tries to uncoil, but there's water in the way. So it pushes this water slowly through the bed of coffee and out comes thick, rich espresso. The addition of a lever has given us a lot of pressure.
Basically, what it does is rack up the pressure massively to over the course of a delivery between 3 to 12 bars.
Much more than the 1.5 bars we had in the fire hydrants of earlier. But there's more to it. The water that's being used is at 93 degrees. We've got rid of the steam.
And that means we're not doing all the bad things that the steam does. Burn the coffee, etc.
But also, a major, major difference. Because these levers create so much more pressure, we can grind our coffee powder much, much finer. This helps to create those rich flavors of espresso we love so much. And it also is responsible for the crema. Now, the science of the formation of crema is quite fascinating, and I'll probably cover it in depth in a future episode. For now, what you need to know is that when you grind coffee fine enough and you have enough pressure, crema is formed. And fun fact, the crema is actually a foam. And a good foam needs surfactants. And in the next episode on a latte foam, I explain more in depth what surfactants are and how they work. And so, by the late 40s, we finally have machines which create good espresso. However, they are far from perfect. Very far indeed. For one, it was difficult to get a consistent brewing temperature. So, you know, your shots could be occasionally a bit sour. But to me, that's a minor problem compared to this machine's biggest liability.
It's 200 pounds of pressure. It's like getting a punch. It's like getting punched.
Prepare yourself for a horror story. Experienced for real by this man.
I am Hyland Joseph. I am West Coast Operation Manager for Espresso Partners. I've been in coffee since 1982.
Hyland is also one of the founders of the Coffee Technicians Guild, but the reason I spoke with him is because he was a barista for a long time.
Bookmark that. No, but I'd love to know. So you're a barista in the early 80s. What kind of espresso machines were you using?
My very first espresso machine that I worked on was a Gazia piston machine, pull-down piston type machine. Yeah.
No way. Hyland began his barista career using these sorts of lever machines.
$800 a day and coffee on the piston machine.
Now, here's why these machines are a liability. When a barista pulls down that lever, it has to go all the way down and click at the bottom. And then you can release the handle. If it doesn't click, it shoots right back up. And Hyland once had a very near miss.
My ear was next to the handle, and it popped up and scratched my ear.
Hyland was centimeters away from being whacked in the face. He got a very, very lucky. But one time.
So one day I'm working at the Blue Parrot and I'm talking to this lovely Italian girl.
When a girl was across the counter.
I'm just smiling at her and I'm wearing a white t-shirt, mind you, and a white apron.
His luck ran out.
And I've pulled down the shot and I'm not paying attention to it. And my chin is right over the handle and it pops.
Oh no.
And it pops into my chin, and you heard a cracking noise.
Oh,
and it cut the skin of my chin. She freaked out. She freaked out and ran away. And I looked down, and I was like, my hands looked like I was out of a serial killer horror movie. Yeah.
Oh my God. Were you seriously hurt?
Damn it, I cracked my jaw. It was fractured. So when they x-rayed it, it was really swollen. I looked like I had been punched in the face really hard.
That's one of the reasons I really love Strata.
But I'm happy to report that in this little horror movie, Hyland did get another chance with the Italian girl.
Did she ever come back?
Yeah, she did. We went on a date.
Really?
Yeah, it was embarrassing.
But Hyland had never tried to learn the language of love.
My Italian kind of sucks, which means I don't know Italian.
His Italian was terrible, and her English, not good enough either.
She spoke Italian, so it didn't really go very far.
And so this little love horror story came to an end.
We choose to go to the moon.
It's the early 60s. It's now about 15 years since that first lever machine came to market. President Kennedy tells Americans,
we choose to go to the moon.
They're putting a man on the moon by the end of the decade.
Not because they are easy, but because they are hard.
Eccola, la Fiat 500.
Italy's streets are flooded with the iconic Fiat 500.
La 500 è tecnicamente modernissima.
My Italian grandmother gives birth to my mum in a hospital in Rome.
Okay,
turn round.
And the espresso machine, as we know and love today, is born.
This is the machine that changes everything. This is what I call the coffee machine that changes the world. This is the Faema E61.
Hold on. The Faema E61. It looks like a retro 60s toaster. Beautiful Italian typography, a red racing stripe going through the middle of it. And this espresso machine has two major advances over that lever machine. a pump, and a heat exchanger. Let's look at the pumps. Listen, this is old technology. They've been around for hundreds of years. But for the first time, they're now affordable. And the way this pump works
is very simple. In the pump is basically two parts. It's a motor that's been connected to paddles.
It's just a motor spinning paddles that push water. And that creates pressure. 9 bars, to be precise. So we don't need a lever to create the pressure anymore. We already have it with the pump. And so espresso machines ditch that dangerous lever. And the second big innovation is the heat exchanger. And this solves the consistency problem I mentioned earlier with the lever machines. With a lever machine, you can't make that many coffees one after another because you use up the hot water in the boiler, then you got to bring in cold water, and you got to wait for it to heat up. But this is all solved with a heat exchanger. Essentially, a little water pipe shaped like a corkscrew, nestled inside the water boiler itself.
The water in the heating exchanger is heated by the water of the boiler.
So the water that actually hits the coffee grounds that, you know, make your espresso, that water isn't coming from the boiler. It's coming directly from the mains in a little tube. And this mains water gets hotter and hotter as the metal tube it's in spins around and around, surrounded by boiling hot water. And it lands on your coffee at 93 degrees. And the result of all this?
Hey presto, you never had to stop.
You can now make espresso after espresso after espresso without having to stop to refill the boiler and wait for it to get up to the right temperature. And you know, from here on in, it's fair to say that espresso machine technology doesn't really evolve that much.
Since late 60s, basically the technology hasn't changed. So we use
You get incremental improvements that make the espresso experience just marginally better. Instruments to deliver specific amounts of water.
The flow meter was at
digital displays.
It's the microchip revolution after this.
Changing how much pressure you can apply.
Pressure profiling for your.
Brancilio even made a machine where you can change the water temperature as you brew your espresso.
Fine-tuning the temperature of the machine during the extraction.
But with this modern style of espresso machine, you know, it still has problems. Two major problems. The first is a problem that also afflicts our embattled barista Hylan.
RSI, repetitive strain injury.
Yeah, I have it in my right hand.
How'd you get it?
10 years of putting portafilters on.
I have met many baristas with repetitive strain injury from just the motion of putting in the portafilter into the group head.
Think about it. You're putting the portafilter on, you're putting it on, and it requires about 30 pounds of force every time you push it in.
30 pounds?
So
that's a lot of force.
That's coming from your shoulder and from your wrist.
When does it flare up?
It actually became a problem when I took a desk job because I couldn't actually close my hands. I had to have carpal tunnel surgery on both my hands because of it.
Wow.
So, and to be honest with you, I actually have a tremor in my right hand from it, from the shoulder, because I was primarily right-handed. So I would pull.
So that's the first problem. Very busy baristas can develop medical problems. And the second big issue, the operator has to be very well trained to produce a good espresso. I mean, this has always been the case, but we've solved so many problems that this is now the biggest problem. Training baristas to make good espresso consistently, not easy. It's so easy to produce inconsistent espressos between different baristas. You know, it depends on how hard they tap. It depends on how much coffee they put in. It depends on how good they are at assessing the grind size. And recently, more tools have been coming to market that standardize many of these things. But still, training good baristas is one of the biggest headaches for a cafe owner. And espresso engineers know this. And immediately after the E61 was released in the early 60s, they have been trying to develop machines that replace the barista entirely.
But the next obvious step is, well, why don't I just go to a super automatic?
Technically, they're called super automatics. And in fact, Starbucks was a major early adopter of these machines in the late 90s.
Starbucks did it. They did it with the thermoplan machine.
I work with customers. Maybe you haven't even noticed it, but next time you visit a Starbucks, look at the barista and how they make espresso. They just push a button and out comes the coffee. But specialty coffee cafes would not use the same machines that Starbucks has. And the perception is it just comes down to quality. The argument goes, yes, the machines Starbucks uses, they're very impressive internally, but they cannot get close to the flavor experience when you have a highly trained barista working with lighter roasted coffee on a traditional espresso machine. But these last 10 years, things have been shifting. If you visit certain specialty coffee shops in New York, London, Taipei, you will find an Eversys. They are the manufacturers of these super automatics and also the sponsor for this episode. And the reason they're slowly being adopted is because
our goal is to be able to control it as good as a barista first.
And this, by the way, is Jonathan Bess.
I'm R&D director at Eversys.
Their goal was to make coffee as good as a good barista. Now, even by their own admission, an Eversys can't make a coffee as good as, you know, a world barista champion. But outside of that group of super baristas working at the best coffee shops in town, from my experience, an Eversys creates a coffee as good as, you know, a well-trained barista in a solid specialty coffee cafe on a busy day. I've tasted coffees from an Eversys at trade shows over the years.
If I could drink this coffee every morning, I would.
Also at their factory.
It's delicious. It's great. Great coffee.
And even Highland himself praises the flavor.
I mean, with technology these days, like the Eversys machine makes pretty close to a near-perfect espresso, so... Yeah. Why?
So what's their secret? What's actually going on inside these machines? And back in the spring, I hopped off a train in the peaceful Swiss village of Sierre, cycled down the river that cut in between the Alps to my left and right.
Cool. Shall we do a factory tour?
And Jonathan Bess gave me a tour of the Eversys factory.
Wow. Okay, here we go into the production floor. This is enormous. Oh my God, this is a huge space.
It's 5,000 square meter.
And the first thing that strikes me is that I cannot see anything here that resembles an espresso machine.
It's like the Terminator. It's like I'm walking through the Terminator right now, you know.
Imagine Optimus Prime or, you know, some kind of robot, and you open them up and you take out their insides.
Honestly, you give this to anybody and you say, what does this machine do? No one's going to understand what this thing does.
I agree.
And all these weird looking boxes with wires and pipes coming out of them, they each perform a very specific task.
All this connection, the plate here that you see with O-rings and electrical connection are here to plug the milk module on top of it.
And so this weird looking box over here, that thing froths milk. And this other weird looking box, that thing grinds the coffee.
So what it looks like to me is like every single one of those actions by a barista has been replaced instead with a module.
What Eversys has done is they have deconstructed every movement that a barista makes and all the movement inside a traditional espresso machine into modules. And all these modules connect to each other in a very tight box.
If you look, stare into this thing, I mean, there's barely an inch of space really to work with. So everything has to fit into a very tight container.
And now what I want to do is show you the ingenuity of just one of these modules, the brewing module, the process that actually makes espresso. And I'll show you how it has replicated everything that a barista on a traditional espresso machine would do. So if you're a barista and you get an order for an espresso, first thing you do, fill the portafilter with a precise amount of ground coffee, level out the bed of coffee, maybe you knock it, you shake it a bit, use a distribution tool, then you tap it, and then lock it into the group head in the espresso machine. You press a button and keep a careful eye on how much espresso is dripping into your cup. Now, a typical espresso recipe might be 20 grams of ground coffee in, 40 grams of wet espresso out, and for the espresso to brew for about 25 seconds. So when you got your 40 grams of liquid out, you press the button, stop the water, pull the portafilter out from the group head, knock out the wet coffee, wipe the filter basket clean with a rag, and then you repeat the process all over again. So how does Eversys replicate all of that in a box the size of a football?
Here you see it initializing and moving, the top piston going down.
And what I found just mind-blowing...
Hold the phone. Okay.
...is that replicate it all using just three components. A metal cylinder and two plugs.
The bottom piston will move and it will take the brew chamber under the grinder.
So a barista gets an order for an espresso. They press the espresso button. a plug comes in and slots itself underneath into the metal cylinder. The metal cylinder is now plugged up from the bottom. It moves itself under a chute and in drops the freshly ground coffee.
We can start to grind and fill up the chamber.
Right.
The ground coffee falls in and the cylinder levels out the coffee with a little shake.
In between is shake to have the ground coffee right. flat.
Right. And now that second plug springs into action. It comes in from above and plugs itself in the cylinder and compresses the coffee.
So we will temp the coffee at 20, 40 or 60 kilos.
And then comes the bit that actually blew my mind. Water rises up from that bottom plug, is pushed through the compressed bed of coffee.
The water will go up through the cake.
The brewed espresso now goes up through tiny little holes in the top plug into a little tube and lands down in our espresso cups. We now have delicious, creamy espresso with a nice layer of crema.
And then how do you remove the coffee?
I haven't even thought about that.
This is also killing me.
And then Jonathan blew my mind a second time when he showed me how they clean this metal cylinder.
Basically, it unplugs from the bottom.
The bottom open, and with the top piston, you push it out.
It's literally the same way you clean an AeroPress. The bottom plug unplugs itself, and the top plug goes all the way through the metal cylinder and then pops out the wet coffee grinds.
Yeah. And down it goes.
Yeah, you push it out.
So now, with machines like the Eversys, you might think to yourself, the barista, we've totally replaced their roles. And this is actually a place of huge debate right now in the coffee community. I'm going to argue that we haven't got rid of the barista. And in fact, what we've done is changed their roles.
I was logging into the screen and then I select the...
Because Jonathan took me through all the parameters you can adjust on an Eversys.
I select the water quantity, I select the coffee quantity, then the compression force we discuss, and we have pre-infusion parameter.
And it was really quite overwhelming.
And we have what we call the second temping.
So what we now need are people who really understand how changing different parameters on this machine change the flavors. In some ways, we're going back in time.
That was not even called barista, it was called machinist.
We need people who really understand the intricacies of this machine and are experts at coffee extraction. And now, here's something you probably weren't expecting me to say. This machine is not perfect. What if we do away with the skilled operator entirely? What if you just poured a bag of beans in the top and the machine instantly understood what the beans are and how to make the most sublime espresso for your unique tastes? And if and when we ever figure that out, even that's not perfect, because you know what's even more perfect than that? Making it cheap enough to put into my kitchen. And this is what I really enjoyed as I explored this story about espresso machine technology. The goalposts keep shifting and engineers rise to the challenge and find the most surprising, ingenious solutions. And I just cannot wait to see where we head next. So thank you for listening to this episode on espresso technology. And surprisingly, it was actually one of the more challenging episodes to make in this science series. I mean, the first draft was like over an hour long and was stuffed full of so much information. But finding that balance between the nerdy coffee science stuff, the social insights, the beauty of the machines, the hard thing was not finding material. The hard thing was deciding what to cut. Anyway, I hope you enjoyed it. And while you're listening, maybe you imagined like your biggest espresso nerd friend. And you know what would mean so much to me? Tell them about this episode. Share this episode right now on WhatsApp to your biggest espresso nerd friend. But seriously, like I really rely on, you know, peeps like you spreading awareness about this series and filter stories. So thank you for sharing it. Now, this episode was a product of the time and insights of many fantastic people, Professor Jonathan Morris, And by the way, we created a podcast series, A History of Coffee, which is probably my most popular podcast to date. I mean, it's been heard over 100,000 times. So if you want more of the historical stuff, check it out, link in the show notes. I want to give a huge thanks to Anacento and the team at Cimbali and Mumak, from Rancilio, Giorgio himself, Giorgio Rancilio, Carlos Gonzalez and the team, Silvio Battaloni and everybody at L'Accademia del Caffè for offering me such a wonderful time when I went to visit them in Florence. And who can forget Highland Joseph telling me all about his war stories. And also, very importantly, the team at Eversys, Jonathan Bess, Alexander Rossier, Aurora Studer and Kamal Bengagam. Without them, this episode couldn't come to fruition. And if you want to learn more about how Eversys makes their machines, I've got a link in the show notes. Now, there are two more episodes left in The Science of Coffee. In the next episode, I show you the magical world of creating good latte foam. And I bust a coffee myth. You know, attached to many espresso machines, there is a steam wand. And we often say, you know, we steam milk, or in the case of the next episode, we steam Oatly. But here's the thing, we're not actually steaming Oatly. We're entraining air into Oatly. So that's the next episode on foam. The final episode is on sonic seasoning and the R&D landscape in coffee. And one thing you will have noticed is that a lot of the development in espresso machine technology, a lot of it has been focused on user functionality, which is the same approach that the grinder manufacturer Fiorenzato take when they do R&D. And if you rewind right to the beginning, the first episode explores what is good water for coffee. And when it comes to espresso machines, having your water filtered like you can with a BWT water filtration system is very important, because I show you what happens when you have too many and also not enough minerals in your water and how it can ruin your espresso machine boiler. And then in the second episode, we explore how to get good flavors from your coffee, coffee extraction. And I tell you the development journey behind Marco Beverage Systems SP9 Brewer. And fun fact, just like Eversys, they are made by hand and not by robots. And the episode before this one explores coffee genetics. And I take you with me as I visit coffee farmers who are working with Triboka, a green bean supplier, in Kenya, to show you how they are trying to overcome the effects of climate change. Now, The Science of Coffee was produced by me, James Harper. I also write and play the piano music. I want to give a huge thanks to Peter Giuliano and Britta Fulmer for their editorial guidance. And again, thank you very much for listening. Take care. Enjoy your espressos, and I'll speak with you next time.